and they had 6 children, 1 dying in infancy. They loved each other greatly, but actually spent the huge majority of their lives apart. They spent over 16 years separated from each other. In 1845, the Livingstons moved to Kolobeng, South Africa, where Sechel, who was a chief of the Kwana people of Botswana, became his first convert. So he was able to get in with Sechel, who had, he actually had a huge past of war and killing and all these bad things, and several wives and, you know, just pagan ways. And David was able to come in and build a relationship with him, and he actually came to Christ and baptized most of his village, and they all started following Christ. But these moves were just the first steps in this daring man's life. Each letter home ended with the words, "Who will penetrate the heart of Africa?" He sickened at heart when he heard of well-fed Christians at home engaging in hair-splitting discussions over doctrinal themes when millions were dying without the gospel where he was. At last, he began a tour for the LMS trying to find a place to establish a mission. In a large part of Africa, white people, Europeans, couldn't be there because they'd get sick and die. So we had to find an area that was above the forest that where they could actually be there and be away from malaria and other diseases that were there. So he passed over the Kalahari Desert, where for days no water could be found, and overcoming almost insurmountable difficulties, discovered Lake Ngami and was welcomed by the local chief. But on account of the unhealthy conditions of the country, found it wasn't suitable for a station. So he had several different missions that he went on, where he went through all kinds of difficulties, was able to share the gospel, but then his mission of finding a place for the Christians to actually come ended up not working out. So he conceived the idea that if a way were opened from the interior of Africa to the coast, Christianity, civilization, and commerce would move freely to these people. So a lot of people in his time thought that he was promoting colonization, but his idea of colonization was that Christian men and women, that, you know, missionaries and other Christians would come and live with these people as equals, work alongside of them, bring the British culture so they'd have the commerce, because he greatly wanted to get rid of the slave trade there and then wanted people to come to salvation. So he believed that if they had Christians there and set up civilization and commerce, that they could accomplish that. So that undertaking, though, involved fearful hardships and a lot of self-denial. It was about this time that he wrote, "I place no value on anything I have or possess except in relation to the kingdom of Christ." So taking his wife and children to Cape Town, because they weren't doing well health-wise, he sent them back to England. So April 23rd, 1852, he set face to his new purpose. He found many obstacles, though, as he was trying to go back into Africa and set up a station there for missionaries. The Dutch Boers robbed and subjected the natives to the worst kind of slavery. They opposed his efforts many times. He was very sick while he was in Africa. Most of the time he was in Africa, he was struggling with dysentery, with a couple times with malaria, with ulcers, with all kinds of things. So he had medicine that he had to have with him at all times. Well, he had several occasions where the Dutch Boers and others stole his medicine, so he had to go long periods of time with no kind of medicine, with hardly anything. So they destroyed his home, took away his goods, but undaunted, he continued through the opposition, exploring regions close by to prepare for the greater task of reaching the coast, preaching, teaching, and healing. During all of his travels, he made notes and observations of geographical and scientific nature and sent them back to England. So he was continually sending notes, basically sermons, but things back to England on a Christian nature and then also geographical discoveries. So about the middle of 1853, Livingston reached Linyanti on the Zambezi River. Here, Chief Sekelesu, who, you know, he had converted, gave him all the aid that he had for the journey, and the missionary explorer, with a few tusks of coffee, beads, etc., you know, other things to trade, and accompanied with 27 Barotse men and some oxen, threw himself into the heart of Africa on November 11th, 1853. After 7 months of untold hardship, he reached St. Paul de Luanda on the west coast. Most people during this journey thought that he had died along the way. A lot of his people deserted him. This actually happened a couple different times that he was deserted by people. But during the journey, he had 31 attacks of intermittent fever. Towards his close, these were accompanied by dysentery of the most painful type, and he was often destitute of food, and especially the kind that he needed for the conditions that he had. as he is traveling through this, he witnessed the horrors of polygamy, incest, cannibalism, cruelties of slavery. He saw it in families being broken up and gangs chained, you know, of slaves being dragged along. At one point, they actually, he was trying to get up the Zambezi River, and they built a special boat, a special steel boat with mahogany paddles, and it was a steam, it was steam powered. They couldn't get through the river because so many bodies of dead slaves had been thrown into the river and kept clogging up his paddles on his boat. So these are the things that he's witnessing as he's trying to go through and share the gospel and discover things. Also at this time in England, slave trade had been illegal for something like 20 or 30 years already. So in his part of the world, it already, you know, was not a common practice anymore. So at St. Paul de Luanda, even though a lot of people thought he was dead, no one expected him to arrive, so there was no mail there for him. You know, if they knew where he was going, people from England would send him different things. A boat offered him passage to England, but though he needed rest and to regain his health, he started back to the interior because he promised Sekeletu that he would bring his men back. So the news reached that he was alive in England. Astonishment and adoration filled the minds of people. He became just, you know, a national hero, a celebrity. The Royal Geographical Society awarded him its highest honor as a gold medal. So a journey of 2,000 miles was before Livingstone as he began his return trip from the west coast eastward on September 24th, 1854. Again, he encountered, you know, many hostile tribes, you know, all sorts of different dangers. But after arriving at Linyanti on September 11th, 1855, he went down the Zambezi River and discovered the famous and beautiful Victoria Falls, which he named himself on that. And then I won't go into all the detail about all the other places that he found, but two places that he found during that trip were two places that they could actually establish missions and that Europeans, could live and not, you know, have reduced issues with a sickness there. And then that trip, on May 20th, 1856, when he reached Quelimane on the East Coast, that was the first time a white man had ever made that distance or been in that part of Africa. So his first visit home, after 16 years of absence, Livingstone made his first visit to England, arriving December 9th, 1856. He had risen from the grave. He could not have been looked upon with more interest or loaded with more honors, because he would disappear for 4 years at a time, and people would just have no idea where he was. There were different times that he would be sending letters back home to let them know about different things, but they would be intercepted by the Portuguese or by whoever, and they would stop that. So he received all kinds of honors when he got home. There had been a lot of unfriendly criticism and things about the prolonged separation between him and his wife, and then also with the fact that he was it seemed to many to be more of an explorer than he was a missionary. But his wife stood by his side through all of this and supported him in what he was doing. So while at home, Livingstone wrote his first book, Missionary Travels. It was a great success in sales and awaits an interest in Africa. On this trip, a very serious matter which had absorbed the attention of most was, as I was talking about, with his seeming to be more of an explorer rather than a missionary. So he resigned from the board from the LMS Society, and actually got sent out now with the Royal Geographical Society as the Queen's consul, as Queen Victoria's consul. So on March 10th, 1858, Mr. and Mrs. Livingstone, with their son Oswald, sailed from England to Cape Town. Mrs. Livingstone became so ill that she had to remain behind and did not rejoin her husband till several years later. He explored the mouth of the Zambezi, made several trips around the area and found a bunch of other things. I'm trying to skip through some of this, Pastor Ed. And visited his old friend Sekeletu to catch up with him. Different things that they found also going back there, it was hard for Sekeletu to come away from, you know, some of his pagan practice like polygamy and different things like that from before. So that was a working thing that he always had with him when he came back. He explored the River Rovuma and assisted in establishing the university's mission. Through all these years, he was establishing sites for missions, preaching the gospel, healing the sick, and contributing religious and scientific articles to periodicals in England. His accounts of the atrocities of the slave trade stirred the whole world. His letters would get sent to England, but they'd also get sent to America and just, you know, all over the place. After spending a year at the Cape, Mrs. Livingstone returned to England, placed her children in school, and in 1862, she joined her husband in Africa, but was not with him for over 3 months, when she went to be with her Lord. Though they spent 16 years apart, David Livingston is quoted saying, "For the first time in my life, I want to die." The following year, while exploring the region about Lake Nyasa, something like that, he was asked home by the government. He returned with the purpose of exposing the slave trade and to obtain means to open a mission north of the Portuguese territory in Africa. His new book, The Zambezi and Its Tributaries, sold 4,800 copies the first evening it was on the market and awakened deep interest in Africa and stirred up great indignation against the Portuguese because of its revelation of their treatment of the natives. They were one of the biggest ones still doing the slave trade and everything in Africa. While at home, Livingston, with his aged mother and his children, save one, had a family reunion. His son, I just find this kind of interesting, his son Robert, the one that wasn't there, had first gone to Africa looking for his father because he hadn't seen him in 4 years or something like that. Didn't find him there, so then he actually went to the United States, ended up joining the federal army to fight in the Civil War, and then died in the Civil War and was buried at Gettysburg. So just the correlation there that, you know, he's fighting for freedom of Africans in Africa, and then his son ends up fighting for freedom of, you know, black people in America. So it's kind of interesting. But he never saw him again at that point, obviously. So Livingston was offered by the Royal Geographic Society, more than offered. They were really, really, really trying to get him to go back to Africa to investigate the watershed there where the source of several different rivers were, the Zambezi, the Nile, all these, and different lakes. So at first, he declined it because he wanted to focus on preaching and doing those things while he was in Africa. This would have been a crowning achievement of his explorations if he had actually done that, because that's, you know, everybody was following that part of his career or whatnot. So that is still his impelling motive for all of his efforts, though, was to serve Christ and to go back and share the gospel. So he returns, but this time it's not with the money from the royal, whatever I called it, the royal, from the queen. So so his equipment upon this return to Africa by way of Bombay was not as good as it should have been. His helpers proved to be of little help. It's actually said that if they weren't African, he actually wasn't that good with people. With Europeans and stuff, he actually had kind of difficulty dealing with Europeans. And then also, you know, with him being constantly sick and everything like that and just dealing with the horrors of Africa, it sounds like it was kind of difficult at times to be traveling with him. But so it says some of his people were ill-behaved and had to be dismissed. And then old scenes that he saw around as he was traveling just really disappointed him, and it was very, very hard on him, and seeing different inhuman cruelties. Also on this trip, he wasn't doing good health-wise. He didn't have the supplies he needed. His supplies ended up being stolen again. His men were leaving him, so he actually ended up having several times to rely on slave traders to get him from point A to point B, which was, you know, the worst thing in the world for him. But he stuck to it and did what he had to do to, you know, try to continue to share the gospel. So then he started turning his mind to the watershed question and trying to start exploring that again. Some of the people that forsook him actually reported him dead. So he was thought dead for quite some time and wasn't heard of. So in spite of all this, he pressed forward, though, and discovered several more lakes. And went back to Ujiji, that's where he had started off. That's where he had a friendly chief there. So for the next 2 years, July 1869 to October 1871, were spent in a journey from Ujiji to the river Lealaba and returning, and were perhaps the saddest years of his life. He beheld the 1,000 villages which Moffat, I don't remember if I told you about that or not, but Robert Moffat, back when he first met him and was telling him about Africa, told him that he, up on this certain hill, he could see the smoke of 1,000 villages who hadn't heard Christ, since that was one of the things that really inspired David Livingston to want to go there. So he beheld the 1,000 villages about which Moffat told and which caused him to give his life to Africa. He himself preached to thousands and tens of thousands of natives, but his strength failed him in 1871. Feet sore from ulcers, teeth falling out through sickness, weary of body and sick of heart, he lay in his hut for 80 days, longing for home, now far beyond his reach. His sole comfort and help was his Bible, which he read through 4 times during this period, and upon the front cover of which he wrote these significant words: "No letters for 3 years," because he would normally get letters and supplies from England, or from most of them from England. No letters for 3 years. I have a sore longing to finish and go home, if God wills. Supplies and letters have been sent, but were intercepted by the Portuguese. The Royal Geographical Society had sent out a search, but could not find him. So then James Gordon Bennett of the New York Herald sent Henry M. Stanley to locate the explorer at any cost. Stanley wrote, "No living man shall stop me. Only death can prevent me. But death, not even this. I shall not die. I will not die. I cannot die. Something tells me I shall find him, and I write it larger. Find him, in big letters." So he meant it. He was serious. At last, after forced marches, he met Susie, I'm thinking is how you say it, but that was one of the men who had been with David Livingstone for a long time through several of his travels and was devoted to him. So he found him and brought him to David Livingstone. And so then a lot of you probably or maybe have heard about a very famous conversation between Stanley and Dr. Livingstone. He says, "Dr. Livingstone, I presume," you know, and he's the only white guy there, so it's kind of... And then, but anyway, them meeting, there's more to the conversation, but them meeting gave David, you know, that push that he needed to get back to serving God, because he was very depressed and having a very hard time, and, you know, wasn't receiving any kind of anything from England. So it was a glad day for Livingstone. Letters and supplies were abundant and appreciated. He forgot his ailments and became overjoyed in this Good Samaritan act. Together, the men spent 4 months exploring Lake Tanganyika. Stanley became a hero worshiper of his companion. And, you know, he worked for the newspaper, so that helps a little bit. So once he wrote, "I challenge any man to find fault in his character. The secret is that his religion is a constant, earnest, and sincere practice." So when David Livingstone, early in his life, when he was traveling through the river and the bodies kept blocking up the boat, he was quoted saying, "I will go anywhere, providing it is forward." Thus, he was impelled even in old age, for instead of returning with Stanley, as he well might have done and was urged to do, he made new resolves to locate the watersheds. He secured new men and pressed into the interior. On March 19, 1872, when 59 years old, he wrote, "My Jesus, my King, my life, my all, I again dedicate my whole self to thee." But the gray-haired, footsore explorer and missionary this time went forward through swollen rivers and dismal swamps every day of the march, being marked with dysentery and most excruciating pains. At every convenient place, he would have his carriers stop and let him rest. April 29th was his last day of travel. He had reached the village of Chitambo in Ilala on Lake Bangweolo. Here, sick unto death, he made observations, carefully brought his journal up to date, drew maps, and gave orders. I'm almost done. Just saying. He rested quietly on the 30th, but at 4 in the morning of May 1st, 1873, the boy who slept at Livingston's door wakened, beheld his master, and fearing death, called Susie. And this is actually a quote written by Stanley. By the candle still burning, they saw him, not in bed, but kneeling at the bedside, with his head buried in his hands upon the pillow. The sad yet not unexpected truth soon became evident. He had passed away on the furthest of all his journeys and without a single attendant, but he had died in the act of prayer. Prayer offered in that reverent attitude about which he was always so particular, commending his own spirit with all his dear ones into the hands of his Savior, and commending Africa, his own dear Africa, with all her woes and sins and wrongs, to the avenger of the oppressed and the redeemer of the lost. So words can never do justice to the noble course which his faithful servants, led by Susie, now took. I think it's kind of insane. But they removed the heart from the body of their dead leader and buried it under a tree where he had died, close to where he had died. They dried the body in the sun, tied it to a pole, and after 9 months' march, reached the coast and shipped it to England. So, yeah. On April 18th, 1874, the remains were laid to rest amidst greatest honors in Westminster Abbey in London. But I mean, seems kind of, but that is pretty impressive if they, like, that's, you know. So the news of Livingstone's death quickened the pulse beat of the world and roused many thousands to accept his interpretation of his own efforts. The end of the exploration is the beginning of the enterprise, that he was quoted saying that often. Africa became at once the favored field for missionary enterprise of almost every denomination. The Congo Free State, through the efforts of Stanley, upon whom Livingstone's mantle fell, was agreed to by hundreds of native chiefs, and the great powers at Berlin framed and ratified a constitution for the free state, carrying out almost every principle for which Livingston had contended, which again, his idea, you know, was not to come in and set up like imperialism and just rule the Africans or, you know, destroy them, whatever. He wanted to reach them with the gospel. And his idea was, as I said, that he could go in there, find a way into the heart of Africa, set up missions and try to work that way, which in many ways you can see that was accomplished. So that's what I'm at.